Hello. Welcome to Therapy Entrepreneurs and Leaders of Color, a podcast dedicated to therapy entrepreneurs and leaders of color around the world who are leading in their space. This is Tamika Faison, your host, and our guest today is Dr. Candace Freeman. Check this bio out. Dr. Candace Freeman is the former program director at Mountain View College Occupational Therapy Assistant Program located in Dallas, Texas. She has 13 years experience as a pediatric and home health occupational therapist. Her specialty is pediatrics with a concentration on fine motor skill development and handwriting. She is also the owner of Tears to Cheers Handwriting Clinic, LLC. And I saw that. I saw the news feature, and I was extremely impressed with that feature, and her own private consulting firm, Freeman Educational Services, that provides independent OT evaluations to schools. Dr. Candace Freeman earned her Bachelor's of Psychology with a minor in Interdisciplinary Studies from the University of Houston, a Master's of Occupational Therapy from the University of Texas Medical Branch, and a Doctorate in Occupational Therapy from Rocky Mountain University of Health Professions. And she is not finished. She is currently a doctoral student attending Albany Christian University, okay, and she's in the process of earning her Doctorate of Education in Organizational Leadership with an emphasis on higher education with a scheduled completion date of fall 2021, so right around the corner. She is a member of the American Occupational Therapy Association, the Texas Occupational Therapy Association, the Vice President of the National Black Occupational Therapy Caucus, a member of Delta Sigma Theta Sorority, and past Student Occupational Therapy Association, and she has presented at the Texas Occupational Therapy Mountain Central Conference in 2018, poster presentation, diversity recruitment practices across the state for occupational therapy assistants, and has a strong passion for exploring the topic of diversity and inclusion in occupational therapy. In her spare time, she loves to compete in pageants, Miss Plus America 2017. And you know what, Dr. Freeman? Uh-huh. We know someone in common. I have to tell you about that in just a minute. Okay. and has held many national and state titles in her 10 plus years of pageantry. Candace enjoys volunteering at her church, providing community service and outreach, and spending time with her family, friends, and 13-year-old Maltipoo Baxter. Welcome, Dr. Candace Freeman.
Hello. How are you?
I'm well. I'm happy to talk to you because I have seen you well before I knew all about, you know, all the great things that you're doing in OT that I've seen on social media, because I don't know if you notice my last name is Faison, and Ariel Faison is my niece.
Oh my goodness.
Yes. And so she was in the pageant with you in 2017.
I know. Yeah, I'm sorry. It was a delay. No, I know Ariel. She actually just helped me recently. So yes. And she's an OTA. So we yes, definitely have an OT connection.
We sure do. Well, thank you. Of course, according to your bio, you are just knocking it out. I mean, you are in school, you are leading in multiple roles, and you have multiple private practices. So let's just jump right in to make sure that we are conscious of the time, considering all that you got going on.
No worries.
So tell us how you became interested in OT. How did that journey start?
You know, I became an OT and even an OT student totally by accident. I went off college as a pharmacy major. I was accepted into pharmacy school. And then right as I was getting ready to enter, I failed my anatomy course by one point. And so I had to sit out a year and retake the course and reapply to pharmacy school. And so all during this time, I was working as a pharmacy technician. And one of my coworkers, she was in OT school at the University of Texas Medical Branch in Galveston. And she asked me, she said, "Have you ever thought about being an OT?" And I'm like, "No, what's an OT?" So she started explaining some of the things that OT, the field of OT, what they can do. And we started talking about pediatrics. And she's like, "Yeah, you basically get paid to play." and they were starting a MOT program around the same time I was looking into the program. And I applied and got right in. I had to do a couple of other things to meet criteria, but I did get in. And it was a blessing when I look at just the flexibility in the field. I think had I became a pharmacist, I would have been burned out by now. But I'm very pleased that the field is really what you make it. And it's a beautiful field. It was an unexpected blessing.
Yeah, sounds like. And so you had never heard in your life of OT when she says
No, I'd never heard of it. And even because I knew, of course, about physical therapy, and I actually wanted to apply to PT school, and I needed more observation hours, but I didn't want to sit another year to do that. So the OT program, as I mentioned, they were starting out, and I had all the qualifications, and I got right in, which is really unheard of, especially now. The programs are super competitive and high volume of applicants. So timing is everything for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it was meant to be. And it sounds like that has led you to, you know, the recruitment efforts that you're doing now. Mm-hmm. You talk about your current leadership roles, those recruitment efforts, and your entrepreneurial roles.
Right. So on a leadership perspective, I am the vice president of the Black OT Caucus. And, you know, our aim is to really advocate for African-American students in the field of OT. I can remember being in OT school and I didn't have any instructors or faculty that looked like me. And I don't even think I really thought about it at the time. I was just in really survival mode, you know, going one semester to the next. And it really didn't hit me until I became a practitioner working in a large metropolitan school district. And I saw a few Black OTs. It was about 30 of us, and maybe five or six were Black. But it didn't even dawn on me, like, oh my God, this is the first time I'm really working with people that look like me in this profession, and just how knowledgeable they were and how brilliant they were. And then as I, you know, began to attend more conferences, and then you sit there and you look out in the area, in the space, and you really kind of feel like a unicorn, just kind of like sticking out. Mm-hmm. And so for me, I just am at the point in my life where I'm thinking, you know, if I can do something to help the next Candace make her academic experience a little bit smoother, where she doesn't feel so isolated, because I think I felt the greatest isolation when I was getting my OTD degree from Rocky Mountain University. I was the only African-American in my class, and I don't think my colleagues were really aware of the impact that played when we were doing group projects and things like that. And I think even for myself, I kind of tried to bury it underneath, you know, sweep it underneath the carpet for a while. But you get to the point where you're like, okay, these are the feelings and experiences that I have, and they need to be heard, and we need to do something about it moving forward. So that's where I'm really am in my life, trying to be a change agent to others, for others, so they don't go through those same experiences, and that they can have a better and a more enjoyable experience through their academic endeavors.
Yes. So you've had experiences where you were the only Black student, mm-hmm. and also that you were in a academic environment where there were no Black faculty.
Right. And even as a program director, you know, I was a program director at Mountain View College for about 5 years. And I can remember going to site visits for field work, meeting with the director of rehab, myself, and our fieldwork coordinator at the time, who was white. And I remember us walking up, you know, first just walking up into the clinic, and we would say, hi, we're here from Mountain View. They would immediately go to my white colleague and say, hi, Dr. Freeman. And we would say, no, you know, and I would, you know, put my hand out and smile and say, no, I'm Dr. Freeman. And it was just like the look. I got that a lot. It was just you know, they just assumed surely this other person must be the program director.
Yeah. So how did you overcome those challenges? Because that really can, I mean, that can hurt.
Yeah.
I've had similar experiences, so I know exactly what you're talking about. Like, you must not be the person that owns the company.
Right.
You know, to be sure, you can't be the owner.
Yeah.
You can't even be the director.
Right. Even with my handwriting clinic, you know, I've had parents come in and say, well, who's the owner? And I say, I'm the owner. And working with children of color, recently I had a young child ask me, is this yours? And I said, yeah, I own it. And he was like, you really own it? Like, it's all yours? And I was like, yes, it is mine. He was like, do you have to go to school for that? And I was like, well, do I have a title before my name? And he was like, doctor. I was like, yeah, so you gotta go to school. But I was like, to be a business owner and to have something of your own, no, you don't necessarily, but to do what I'm doing, yes, you have to go to school. So I like that I'm in a position right now to even put that thought. I put the thought in the student's head, but now even the small children to kind of plant that seed. You know, and just dealing with the injustices of individuals bypassing me or disregarding me, you know, I think at some point I became just immune to it. That I knew at some point it was going to happen, but it's more that I'm in control of how I react to the situation. Because, you know, I could, you know, seem disgruntled or have an attitude with them or, you know, try to set them straight. But I think everything has a teachable moment. So it's really about presentation and really just taking the higher road with that.
What a great way to explain how you have overcome, you know, to say, you know what, I can use this as a teachable moment instead of getting angry. And, you know, which, you know, how would that help the situation? They're already looking at you as less than, but you say, I'm going to use this as a teachable moment. So I love that you are able to take your challenges and approach them in a way that can potentially change the mind of other people and how they are viewing people of color in leadership and entrepreneurial roles. So I think we've talked about the other question. Where I was going to say, how has it impacted you? And you kind of talked about how it has impacted you to be a person of color in the profession. I'm curious, like with your faculty position, do you have any thoughts about faculty recruitment? Because I know there are a lot of efforts right now to increase diversity within the profession, you know, for students. But as you said, sometimes we have more diversity with students, but then we're looking up and we don't have as many going into academia.
Right. So, you know, when I was working in academia, you know, one thing I took great pride in is that my cohorts were very diverse. They were diverse from the point of race. They were diverse from the point of religion. They were diverse from the point of just male, female. Like the last group we had, it was half male, half female, which we traditionally know that OT is a women-driven field. So to just have those types of group as my cohorts, I was very proud of. But very early on when I was working on the design and the curriculum and what I wanted the program to be, I knew I wanted it to be dynamic. I knew I wanted it to be different than the traditional OTA programs that you would see. And so especially being in a large metropolitan area, we need to reflect the communities that we're serving. So I tried very hard to, you know, look at the candidates and the students that we had and see if I could find faculty that was representative of that, or they could bring in a fresh lens on different topics and emerging practice areas and things like that. I think that's very critical to the progress of a student, because oftentimes if you do find, you know, the traditional faculty, their mindset is kind of set on how they want to carry things out. And I think you have to be open and receptive to new experiences and how to really reach students.
Yeah, and so you were intentional about it. That's very good for me to hear. We have a diverse cohort coming in at Duke. And one of the things we've looked at is having a mentorship program with people who have shared lived experiences. And so that, it sounds like those intentions and actions were effective for your student population.
You know, it does make a difference. I'm trying to make sure I caught the last part you were saying.
Yeah, I was just saying it sounds like you were intentional and that it was effective because people want to connect with people with shared lived experiences, you know, whether it's like you said, people of color or people of the LGBTQIA plus community, gender. They're looking for people who have that shared lived experience.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And like I said, you know, we're in a large metropolitan area, so we really have to be reflective of the communities that we're serving. And even working on my dissertation, that's some of the things that I'm looking at. And also, I'm looking at the lens of perception versus reality, how people perceive the lack of diversity and inclusion versus the reality of it in the field of OT. And it's so funny because one of my instructors during my dissertation process, she really didn't understand the need for the research. She was like, well, I don't see what your problem is. And I was like, it was funny to me because that's exactly why I'm doing the research.
Right.
They don't think it's a problem. So I found it humorous. Like we went almost all semester and she's like, I just don't understand your problem of practice. And I don't. And I just, for the life of me, you know, I spoke with my chair. My chair's like, keep explaining it. And I just sat and I thought, this is exactly why I'm doing this research, for people who don't think, who are perceiving that there's not a problem, but there is a real identifiable problem with this. But not only that, but what can we do moving forward? Because it's one thing to do the research, but what type of action plan or initiative can we create to assist with this? And you know, I've been working with AOTA with creating a toolkit, a DEI toolkit that we're hoping to roll out really soon to help practitioners and educators with, you know, DEI practices and policies and really how to move forward utilizing the resources.
That's great. That's great. And you know, that comment about I don't see that there's a problem, I hear so many people say the same thing. You know, people of color, when they say it to someone who is not necessarily around other people of color, they don't know because it's not part of their world. It's
right.
Always like, you know, how many people do you know who are Black OTs where you actually have relationships with? Because if you spend time with these people, you will hear the stories and you will realize that, yes, there is an issue. It's a real issue. And I'm glad that you're not only doing the research, but you're looking at what you will do with that research once it's completed. How will you implement? What strategies will be in place? What toolkit, you know, what will be in the toolkit and available to our students through the professional organization. So I am really looking forward to that toolkit being available and making sure that I spread the word through this podcast, but also through other platforms.
Absolutely. Thank you for that.
It's awesome. What else would you like our audience to know?
I would like the audience to know, especially students of color, that know that you do have a voice. You do have a purpose in the field. And I would really say remain open, receptive, and flexible. Any OT has to be flexible. You know, I thought I would be a school-based therapist forever, and I would retire from school-based, so, you know, being a school-based OT. But little did I know, you know, I would work 13 years, and then 5 years after that, you know, I would be an OTA program director. I had no vision initially as a new grad to go into academia. But then the wealth of information that I learned in designing a complete program from scratch, you know, and then going back into the clinic with my handwriting clinic. It's just so many avenues that you can go. If you have a niche, you know, and something you're super interested in, stick with it. You know, my niche is handwriting. It's pretty unique. I'm the only African-American handwriting clinic in the Southwest United States that I'm aware of. So it's a niche. It's been a challenge because we were opening in the middle of the pandemic. But, you know, I'm very optimistic about moving forward. And we're kind of at the end of the tunnel, hopefully, with the pandemic. So things will definitely be on the upswing. But, you know, just stay encouraged and whatever's in your heart to do, you know, do, and don't forget to help others along the way.
Yeah. Whatever's in your heart. So did you open the clinic during the pandemic?
I did. I started my business January 2020. I was supposed to have a grand opening March 17th. And then we went shelter in place March
13th. Oh my goodness. Wow. But you're still thriving. And you know,
we're still, you know, moving along. You know, we're cash-based primarily, so it makes it challenging because we're in the middle of a pandemic. So a lot of people are thinking, you know, is that really a necessity? But, you know, we're seeing now the gaps that children are having from this past year. So, yeah, it's becoming more of a necessity. We're seeing lots of parents bringing children in, and we're gearing up for summer camps. We have slot availability for that. All that good information is on our Instagram and website at tears2cheers.com. But, you know, this is becoming more of a necessity. And I know in the state of Texas, they're not even really teaching handwriting instruction. Some school districts do, but it's not like mandated or anything like that. They stopped that a while back.
Yeah, I wish you were in North Carolina. Bring you over to my 12-year-old. And he did. Yeah, writing. We've made some progress. But yes, I think that there is a need in Texas and across the, probably across the at least the states, for these specialized areas of practice. And sometimes people think you can't be successful if you niche down like that, you know, and I think it's different for different people, but it certainly sounds like you found a space that you can meet a need. And that's the big thing about whether or not you're going to be successful is if you have, is there a need?
Right. And you, I mean, you definitely have to work at it. It's an evolving process. But you definitely have to work with any startup business. You know, you really have to work on it, you know, and nurture it. And just like the startup program for OTA, you know, it was many nights I was on campus to midnight, 1 a.m. working on things, getting ready for program accreditation. Same thing with the business, you know. I don't have traditional hours. I'm here, you know, doing this, doing that. So it's just ongoing, but it's something that I'm passionate about. So I don't mind.
So you mentioned a few things. So first you said, like, if it's in your heart, if there's a need, if, and then you said, you know, a work ethic. And I think sometimes people see, like, look at beautiful Dr. Candace Freeman. She's on TV and, you know, she's been highlighted on the news. Right. They don't necessarily know, you know, all the back end.
Well, even, you know, just on the education side, because I have a lot of student loan debt, you know, to be honest. And, you know, a lot of people don't see that. They say, oh, okay, you know, she has a doctorate and she's working on another doctorate. But along with that comes a lot of other things like student loan debt and financing for college and, you know, all those things. So people only look at it one side or one way, but there are so many other factors that are going on behind us.
Exactly. And if you don't mind, I just want to quickly say, someone sent to me, a Black OT sent me a link the other day, and it's $40,000 of loan forgiveness for anyone who's faculty, whether they're part-time or full-time and you're from a disadvantaged background. So I want to put all the links that you mentioned earlier. You said tears2cheers.com. I'd love to put a link to the highlight that was on the news, and then also to this loan forgiveness, because like she said, there are sacrifices that go on behind the scenes whenever you're in any type of leadership role.
So right.
For your sacrifices. Thank you for meeting these needs and leading in our profession, contributing to the diversity. Do you want to leave us with any a quote to end the show?
Wow. You know, it's one of my favorite quotes I use, and one of my go-tos for when I compete in pageants, but it's by William Arthur Ward. And it's, if you can imagine it, you can achieve it. And if you can achieve it, you can become it. And I say that every day, because every day brings new challenges. So you just, but if it's in your mind, if the thought came across, it wasn't by accident. So go with that thought and be intentional, as we, you know, discussed earlier, and bring it to fruition and execution. But it's going to require some work on your part.
Exactly. And you're doing that work. You're rolling up your sleeves and doing the work. What can we do to support you in that work?
You know, I really right now, like I mentioned, really try to be there for our students of color, is for one, you know, for two, for myself, really spreading the word about Tears to Cheers, the benefits of handwriting instruction. Why is it so important? Why is it a skilled service that OT practitioners can deliver? And just really, you know, spreading the word about the business. We are, we're doing in-person, but we also can do virtual sessions as well. So you don't have to be, I'm in Dallas, Texas. You don't have to be in Dallas, Texas to receive the services. We're currently having evaluations. They're typically $150 handwriting evaluations, but I'm running a special for $50 and then 8 session packages for $450 plus tax. So if you know of any children, this can be nationwide, you know, that you think would benefit from my service, please spread the word and let, you know, and reach out and we'll see what we can do for them.
Awesome. If I was in person with you, I just stand up and do a standing ovation because I love how you articulated your pitch about your services and not everybody's able to do that. I'm like, this sounds like amazing. You got this special going on and you got this need. I'm like, wow, she's got it going on. So thank you, Dr. Freeman, for being with us today. I am going to take a look at that website. I'm going to put those links there and definitely spread the word. I'm going to put it on LinkedIn and
And we have Facebook and Instagram as well. We don't have Twitter yet, but our Facebook and our Instagram are very dynamic. I just recently did a commercial with our great social media content creator. So that's really great. And like I said, we're gearing up for summer camps. We do summer camps, after school sessions, one-on-one sessions, you name it, we can do it.
Wow. Okay, so y'all heard it. You heard it here. If you're in Texas, or not necessarily in Texas, if you're anywhere because of the telehealth and you have a child that is struggling with handwriting or you know of other people who might be.
Or just fine motor deficits. Yeah.
Yes. Please check out tearstocheers.com and take a look at that in the bio of this podcast, the link podcast.
And it's tears and the number 2, because I know like the title of it is Tears, T-O, Cheers, but the website, we kind of cut it down. So it's tears2cheers.com.
Okay. Well, thank you all for listening. Thank you, Dr. Candace Freeman, for being here today. Don't forget to follow. Until next time.
Thank you.